Britney Spears, Kim Kardashian, Paris Hilton. Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global.
I mean, the lines are blowing up.
Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. Oh, look at you. All right, honey, buddy, I'll be right with you. I'm a good guy. If you attack us, I attack you. Mary Hammer. Hello, my name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Boy, it was powerful. This is a no-win situation. I'll give you a call in about an hour and a half. I survived it, and I'm at the end of it.
Jackson, and so should you.
There we go. We're live. Well, we're on a special time right now. We have a very special guest coming in, really special guest, and it's going to be a great interview. My name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and welcome to the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. And we are global, like I said. Good morning. Good afternoon and good evening. We are worldwide. David Armstrong coming into the studio. He has a book out called Why Me? My Fight for Life. What a great story. A little bit about it. I'm just going to tease you, and I think he may be in the studio right now. The book is an autobiography of his life. You know, he grew up without parents at the age of 12. His mother died. He was in and out of juvenile detention, foster homes, boy camps until he turned 18. He was able to overcome his destiny, and he has been able to serve 24 years in a U.S. Air Force. You got to be smart to go in the Air Force. He owns 3 martial arts schools. He served as a VP for the board of directors for the 1M+ nonprofit, and even created his own martial arts program for at-risk youth. He's a mentor. He was mentoring these guys. This guy is a phenom. I'm thinking this is David. I'm not quite sure. But I am going to open up the phone, so it should be a really interesting interview. So I hope you stay with us. And again, you're listening to Hammer Radio Network at Hammer 96.7 Worldwide Network. I'm going to open up the phones, and let's see if this is David. I'm sorry. If you'd like to come into the studio, you know the number, 319-527-6099. That's 319-527-6099. That's the number to get you in the studio. That's the number to get your voice heard around the world. I want to give a shout out to Dr. Mel Cotto. What a wonderful woman. I think David knows her. Let me open the phone and see if this is David. Is this David?
Absolutely. How you doing, Brian?
Pretty good. I can hear you a little echo, but I can still hear you. But here's your crowd. Look at that. Wow. They've been waiting for you, David. Wow. You know,
it's awesome.
Amazing. You know, you beat the odds, man. You beat the odds because your background, how you grew up, you should be in the penitentiary. You know what I mean?
Or dead. I think I'd be dead by now. Hey, before we get too far in, I always start all my interviews, all my video stuff with this. Hey, unlimited fam! So, we're good to go now.
I feel like I'm in a WWE ring with you. I love the energy, David. I love it.
Hey, you know, so my business is called Unlimited Potential Network. So I'm a life coach. You kind of touched on that a little bit about the mentoring, but So this unlimited potential mindset, man, this like unlimited family that we're building is just all the rave. It's that's it. So I always want to kind of pump the room up, pump the audience up, pump the listeners
right.
up, and make sure that they know that they're unlimited, man. There's no limitations. The end.
Wow. Wow. David, I could read your story, but I'd rather you tell it from your own voice. What you went through, how Ooh. You grew up, how you overcame this, how you progressed, how you became successful. In your own words, David, I want to hear it.
All right. You know what? Let me begin with the introduction to my book that just mm-hmm. came out, you had mentioned. I just want people
sure.
to kind of put themselves in this place, all right? So it opens up with, imagine going through life absolutely and totally alone. Mm. Take a moment to picture this emptiness, this isolation, this fear. Life is already full of challenges. That's why it's called life. However, no one should face life completely alone, especially a child. It makes you question why. Why me? What did I do? Why my mom? Why my dad? Why my family? Ultimately, you question, why do I even have to live? It's an unfortunate reality that many youths in our world have to face. This includes me as a young boy. What sets me apart from this unfortunate majority is the fact that I'm here writing this book, an autobiography to help and inspire our youth who may be going through the same situations that I once had to go through. This book is intended to motivate individuals working with youth, foster parents, teachers, ministers, youth correctional officers, judges, attorneys, social workers, and the youth themselves. I hope my story helps you to see that despite some of the situations life throws at us, there's always a way.
Mm-hmm.
I sat down, Brian, and I'm not an author. I'm not, you know, I just knew that I had done so much to give back, and I retired from the Air Force. I moved to Greece, and I could just sit happy, you know, sipping margaritas on the beach, mojitos on the beach, just hanging out for the rest of my life. And I took about 2 years after I retired. I sold my martial arts schools. I didn't have anything to worry about. I didn't get up and think about anything but playing some video games, hanging out with some friends, going to coffee or whatever. And I spent 2 years doing that, kind of chillaxing. And then I couldn't do it anymore. I said, man, you know, I got this book that I really want to get out there. I want to make sure that people are able to have something to overcome some of the obstacles that they are going to encounter. But I wanted it aimed specifically for people that are working with at-risk youth or at-risk youth themselves. And I talk a lot about destiny, right? And we're just thrown in to whatever destiny that's facing us. You didn't have a choice what ethnicity you were. You didn't have a choice of your skin complexion. You didn't have a choice of your parents being rich or poor, there or not. You had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
You're just there, boom. And you know, once you get to a certain age, you kind of have to realize that I can become what my destiny is, or I can overcome. And there's nothing wrong with becoming what destiny is. If I was born into a rich family and they gave me a CEO position at their company, and you know I'm kind of doing that thing. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. But that's not the destiny that a lot of us are born into. And so, talking about overcoming your destiny, talking about how you have a choice. At some point, you have some agency over what you're going to become, who you're going to become. And it's not going to be easy sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm. I hear. You know, but I do want to stop you right there. When you went into martial arts, there's reasons why kids go into this area. How old were you when you started to go into martial arts? I would guess about 13, 14 maybe.
14, yeah, exactly.
Now, what was the reason for martial arts, and why martial arts, and who guided you into that area? I mean, that's really interesting, because I'll ask a couple of questions. Why?
Okay. So, look, I had an instructor named Otto Johnson. Sensei Otto was about 6'10", 300 pounds of just big man. And he was a therapist at one of the boys' homes that I was in. And he had this little martial arts program for the kids that were doing well. And they would train in the garage or out in the backyard. And I didn't want to have anything to do with that. I was running the streets. I always fought, so I knew how to fight. So, doing martial arts didn't really appeal to me. And, one day I was always a smart kid. I was always pretty aware of things, and I knew that you couldn't put your hands on staff. And as soon as you put your hands on staff, all bets are off. They can restrain you. They can do whatever they want. And so I knew that. And so I didn't typically put my hands on staff. And one day, Sensei Otto was walking in the hallway, and I was about to leave out of the house. And it was after curfew time, you know. And he says, Dave, where are you going? And I said, oh, I'm going to leave. I'll be back. And he says, you're not going anywhere. And I said, yeah, I am. And he proceeded to stand in front of the door. And usually staff, they won't challenge you like that. They'll just kind of go, okay, fine, report you. Maybe they'll call the police. Mm-hmm. The police will come pick you up at some point. Maybe you'll go back to that group home or boys home. You don't. Maybe you spend, the week in juvenile detention until they find another place. And I didn't care. I had nothing to look for. I had nothing, I just didn't care about anything. My mom was dead. I didn't have any family. I didn't have anything really to make me want to strive to be okay or good.
Right.
In quotes, you know?
Right.
So Sensei Otto's in front, he's a big old guy standing in front of the door. And I decided I was going to push him. I don't know where I was going to push him to, because he wasn't moving. he wasn't going anywhere. But I decided I was going to push him out the way so I could get out the door. And boy, he grabbed the hell out of me. So he gently guided me to my room. And in his guidance, he ended up choking me, and I kind of blacked a little bit. Yeah, and I'm sure he wasn't trying to hurt me. Then I woke up, and I'm like, oh, cuz, we going to get you. My boy's going to shoot you. You can't put your hands on D-Dog. You can't put your hands on D-Dog like that. Okay, whatever.
Damn.
He wasn't worried about me doing anything.
You know, it's interesting. When you say your mom died, what about your father? Do you know much about your father?
I don't. I vaguely have a memory of a man being my father, and I write about this in the book, in the book, that he put out by my mom, and it seemed like he was cheating on my mom, and she put him out.
Right.
There were some suitcases out. But I was really little. Those memories are really vague. But I never had him or another father figure in my life until my mom remarried this bastard of a guy. I tell you, this guy would beat the hell out of my mom, beat the hell out of me. He would. I write about this also. He'd knuckle up his. He put his middle knuckle out, and he would hit me on the top of my head, and he'd call them knuckle sandwiches. And, this guy was just, just abusive to the umpteenth power, just a horrible person. And so I didn't have any father figure in my life until Sensei Otto.
Right. That's why I was getting ready to go at. Now, when you were growing up, was your mom an alcoholic, or did, was she did any drugs or anything? Was she one of these distant moms? How was she as a child to you?
No, man, I remember, I have fond memories of my mom early on. Like, if I remember back, like, us playing with each other, her chasing me around the house, me dancing, you know, for her and her friends.
Right.
And my mom was deaf. And so my first language was sign language. And
cool.
So I remember, you know, So I remember communicating for her, the words and stuff like that. And it seemed pretty normal. It seemed pretty normal, you know, given the situation, it seemed pretty normal early on. And then, I don't know, you know, she ended up with this guy. We ended up in the hood. And you know, I remember, you know, cops, always being around. I remember, you know, gunfights in apartment complex. I mean, we were in the hood. I remember, I remember getting government cheese. You know, we were on you know, we were poor, and
right.
I don't know what happened. You know, I can't, you know, because I was so young, I can't understand, you know, how we went from what I think was normalcy to, you know, poverty in the hood, you know, in bad situations. But that's what happened.
Well, that goes with the book that we're talking about. David Armstrong, remember the name. He's the real deal. This is the real deal. And we go back to the... You'd be surprised how many people come on a show and say, well, I wrote a book because of my friend, or what. You're the real deal. And this is why we have to overcome one destiny. I'm going to go through them. This is in the book, everybody, how you overcome one's destiny. And, David, I'm going to ask you that question. And wait, the name of the book is Why Me? My Fight for Life. And now we're going to talk about overcoming one's destiny. David, take it away.
Okay. You know what, as a motivational speaker, as a life coach, as a person that doesn't need to work for a living for the rest of his life, I care about people. I want to see people just better. And I understand what depression is. I was there. You know, I was depressed for a couple of years after I retired because I have a broken spine. I have something called spondylolisthesis, and, It was pretty depressing knowing that my life of martial arts, my life of football and rugby and sports and working out was over. Like that was not going to happen anymore. No matter what I did, and I went all over the world trying to find physical therapists, kinesiologists, doctors to fix me, and it just wasn't going to happen. And depression hits you, you know, brother, it's no joke. And I didn't know. My wife told me, and my best friend, Brock told me, like, they were both like, you're depressed. No, I'm fine. You know, I'll get over it, you know? And no, like depression is real. And so I started life coaching. I got out of depression. I went and had surgery. I had multiple level fusion. I'm okay. I'm not better, but I'm not popping pain pills all day. But the truth is, I take all this life experience and I go, I have so much that I can give to people, and overcoming your destiny. You know, when you're sitting at home depressed, or when your wife just left you, or your husband just left you, like your destiny can change from moment to moment. You know,
right.
you can get into a car wreck today and you're rolling around in a wheelchair a month from now. And that's your life now. And you go, wow, I have to, you're not going to overcome the fact that you've experienced something. Like I can't overcome everything that I've experienced, nor would I want to. Right, it's given me the ability to help so many people now. So I wouldn't change a single solitary thing about my past. But understanding that you're not bound to today, right? Understanding that it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of effort, it takes a lot of being able to to deal with the struggles of trying to overcome your destiny, but you can get there. You know, one of my role models is Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. if you listen to him talk, if you read anything about him, you'll know that he was turned down by many, many people. You know, he was kicked off of the football team when he was trying to play. And so there's a lot of times where you figure, well, this is it. This is, you know, this is just my destiny. But
right,
it's not true. You know, you don't have to give up on yourself.
Wow.
So, yeah, man, I just love to see people better. That's all.
But you know, the road we travel, and I know that you want to connect to the youth, and especially the ones that are on the edge, or could go wrong, go right. But how many times have you thought about suicide?
Now you're cutting deep. So once, Brian, I thought about suicide, and I tried to kill myself after my mom died. So I'll paint this picture. It's also in the book. I'm in a boys' camp. They took me away from my mom, placed me in a boys' camp. The judge was just tired of me being in and out of juvenile detention and in the courtroom. And he said enough. So here I am at the boys' camp. And I used to go home on home passes every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I just got back from a home pass. I'm at school, and my social worker, and I'll never forget Deborah Bowser. I'll never forget. She came to school, and they called me out of the classroom. You know, David Armstrong, go to the front office. I thought, oh boy, what's up now? So go to the front office, and your social worker is coming to, your guardian is coming to get you, is what they call them. So your guardian's coming to get you. And Deborah comes, and she has this somber look on her face. Oh, something's up. You know, I thought I was in trouble or something. So so here comes Deborah, and she says, hey, we have to go to see your mom. She's in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a hospital. Yeah, she's in a hospital. I came to find out that she had a brain tumor and had an aneurysm. They had a stroke.
Wow.
And you know, we walk in here. The last picture I have of my mom, I didn't go to the funeral. I didn't anything, nothing after this, is my mom laying in the hospital bed, and then she starts convulsing, eyes rolling in the back of her head, nurses and doctors running in, kicking me out of the room, kicking Deborah out of the room, and that was it. And that scared the hell out of me. And that was I think the most traumatizing thing I've ever had to encounter in my life is seeing my mom, like, you know, shaking on the bed, eyes rolling back of her head, doctors
right.
all over. It was just weird. It wasn't something that a 12, 13 year old kid should have to see. And so after she died, she died shortly after that. She passed away, I think 2-3 weeks, something like that after that encounter at the hospital. I'm more than depressed. I'm just, you know, when you have nobody except, you know, one person, and then one person is taken away from you. I went through a phase while I was blaming her. You know, I didn't have anything to live for. I didn't have anyone. It's just life for this 12, 13 year old kid was just horrible. You know, you're
right.
more than alone. You know, I was having a conversation with one of the life coaches that I've coached yesterday about this, and I'm going to actually I've recorded it. I'm going to put it on my YouTube channel. But she asked me, like, what's that like? And I said, the best way I could describe that feeling is picture a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
You're already out in outer space. You know, you're already in outer space, and nothing's around, right? It's just black, and then you see this black hole, and it seems like it could just swallow everything, and they do everything up, you know, swallow a star up, and then it's just gone. And so that's what it felt like. Just a void, just a big hole in my heart, in my soul, in my being. So one day I leave the boys camp that I was at, and I remember it's raining. I'm sitting under a bridge, and I decided, you know, I'm crying. I'm like, why, blah, blah, blah. And then I decided to pick a bottle up and start slitting my wrist. And I believe if I quote myself correctly in the book, I say, you know, cut and cry, cut and cry, cut and cry. That's what it was. I was cutting and crying and cutting and crying. Right. And, you know, people that I believe, I'm not a suicide expert by any means, but I believe that people that contemplate suicide or go through with trying to commit suicide just have this emptiness in them. Just that
right.
that black hole, and there's no way out. You don't see an out. All you see is something in front of you that's just going to swallow you up, you know? And I just wanted out. I just wanted, you know, I just, there was nothing for me to live for. And here I am as a kid. So yeah, that's when I tried to commit suicide. I'm glad I didn't. And it's funny, it's ironic that I felt even worse after, because I felt like, oh, I can't even kill myself right, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've heard stories like that. Yeah. I felt that way, though, David. I mean, I felt that. You'd be surprised of 1 in 6, or I think it's even closer than that, 1 in 4 people will think about committing suicide. 1 in maybe 8 will attempt to try it in their lifetime. You know, I know it's a shameful thing, but it's in our society, and it's a lot of people, man, they feel like doing that. But I'm glad you didn't either. I'm glad you had the strength and the courage not to do it. The pussy way out is doing it. The courage is to say, I'm going to take the pain and I'm going to overcome this pain and I'm going to do something about it. You know what I mean? It took a lot.
Brian,
that's courage. Yeah.
I'm going to disagree, man. You say the cheap way, the way out. Yeah, here's the deal. I'm going to say punk ass way, right? In the hood,
right.
We say punk ass. So no punk ass way to deal with this black hole that's in front of you. And
true.
A lot of times, man, when people, I don't want to speak like I'm a suicide expert. I'm certainly not. But I'm definitely an expert in people and humanity. And I'll tell you, a lot of times people just can't see anything else but that black hole. There's nothing. Picture a black hole, right? Like in the universe, you're already in space, right? And it's already dark all around you. Everything is just miles away, and in front of you is just this thing that's going to just swallow you, right? And you go, well, I don't want to go through that, so forget it. You know, I have nothing in front of me, forget it. It's hard, man. I can understand why people feel so badly about their future. And that's what it is. You know, I think most people that attempt suicide or commit suicide just don't see that light at the end of the tunnel. And sometimes there is not a light at the end of the tunnel. That's, you know, the notion of you know, light being it, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. That's the
right.
end. There's not always a light at the end of the tunnel that you can see. Once you get past a certain point, you know, once you start to understand that you can overcome your destiny and you can be the person that you want to be, whomever that is, then you could start seeing a little bit of light, and then you could start walking towards that light, working towards that light, getting towards that light. That makes sense to you? That's my take.
Oh, hell yeah, it does. That's beautiful. I hope that's in the book. No, seriously. I hope that's in the book. I really do.
It's not, unfortunately. I don't talk exactly about that. That just came to me. But
really? That's pretty damn good. And, you know, we're talking with the great. I'm going to give you a name now because first I thought First I thought was infamous, but now I'm going to say great. You upgraded. The great David
Brian.
Armstrong. Yeah.
I appreciate that. I really do. I just, I don't know. I hope to make an impact on humanity. That's all. I hope people pick up the book or, you know, have a coaching session with me or, you know, go on the YouTube channel and something just hits home. You know, they have that aha moment and go, oh my goodness. I don't need to put that gun to my head or, oh my goodness, you know what?
Right.
I can't see the light, but you know, that Dave guy said that there's a light and, you know, maybe I just can't see it right now, but I know it's there, and it just motivates them, you know?
Right. It really does. You'd be surprised. You know, when you think all hell breaks loose in your life, put yourself in the next person's shoes because somebody has it far worse than you and they are succeeding and they're overcoming it. I'm walking in the bookstore, we're going to talk about your book. Again, we're talking with David Armstrong, and the name of the book is Why Me? My Fight for Life. And there are people, now your book is not in a how-to section, is it? Nobody goes to the how-to sections. I hope your book is somewhere else. I know it's online, but.
We just released it. It's on Amazon Kindle as well as Amazon Publish. Yeah, so you can order it directly on Amazon worldwide. And, you know, it's under military, since I served in the military. It's under motivational and self.
Cool.
And it's under youth mentoring, I believe.
There you go. Good categories. Now, I'm a youth. I'm 14. I'm in Barnes & Noble. I can see you undercover, and you're already energetic. I mean, you just pop off that book. It's like you're going to grab me and say, hey, read this, and, you know, put my face to the cover and go, read it now. And so I read your book, and what do you want people to come out of when they pick up your book? What kind of experience do you want them to experience by just picking this up? And it could be a life-changing thing, but they don't know that until they read it. So what do you want them to come away with it after they pick up your book?
So it's kind of threefold. One is I really want this book to be in every juvenile detention center in the world, or at least in the English-speaking countries. I want kids that are in bad situations, in foster homes, group homes, all of that stuff, right? So we'll label them at-risk youth. I want them to be able to pick the book up, read it, and go, not only did somebody have it pretty bad, or I might even say worse than me. I don't like to label that, but somebody had it pretty bad, and he's made it to retired in Greece, and, you know, I don't want to say, and just comfortable, you know, never has to work, blah, blah, blah. So I want them to look at it and go, wow, I can open up the light at the end of this tunnel like this guy is talking about, and I could be something. I could be a president if I want. I could develop this guy. I could be, a singer. I could do something. My life isn't just destined to be a kid that is released from correctional facility or group home or foster home, and then you stay in the same environment that you grew up in, whatever that is. You know, you don't have to be that. You know, you definitely. I'll tell you, I say this in the book. I thought my destiny was to be a hitman or a big time drug dealer. I'm serious too. Not like BSing you. I wanted to just be a hitman or like this Al Capone drug dealer. That's what I thought. That's what I thought my destiny would be. I was always a very driven. I was always this type of person that would accomplish stuff, but it was always for the wrong reasons. Even in school, like I got a hold of some of my arrest records and stuff. I'll tell you, I don't know if you saw this in the book. My first arrest was when I was 9 years old for armed robbery. Mm-hmm. So I was and charged with a felony. I wasn't convicted, but charged with a felony at nine, man. Ridiculous.
Wow.
I didn't even know that until I got my records from California State. So back to the people that are picking the book up. Look, the kids that are picking
right.
I want them to know that they can change the path that they're currently on. That trajectory is not a straight one, and you can change it. You just have to have some good people around you. And that leads to the second, and I think the most important person that's going to be able to get something from this book. So the most important people that are going to pick this up are the people that are working with these young men and women. Every judge, every social worker, every attorney, every staff member at a group home, I want them to be like, this is just part of their training when they, you know, get a new position. Oh, and read this book, because there's some stuff in there that will change their current perspective of these kids.
Right.
And that's just the truth. We all come from something, and you don't know what you don't know. And so I encountered as a kid many people that cared, that truly cared about me, that truly worked with kids because they wanted to. I also encountered the opposite, okay? People that were just, mm-hmm. you know, doing something for paycheck. But I'm talking to the people that are truly in it for the right reasons. You just don't know what you don't know. And sometimes having a perspective of not only the kid, but somebody that has successfully mentored hundreds, if not thousands of young men, really puts things into context for you. That makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And the next topic is you're targeting at-risk youth, and we talked about that. But I think this is required reading for all, and as you know, any kid who are 12 and up maybe should have access to the book. But I know why you're targeting, it'd be a dumb question, why at-risk, you were an at-risk youth. I understand that. Are you reaching them? Have people, like when you experience what you're experiencing, you really want to help people. Have you reached any people? Has there been any success story, any youth success story that you could come up with? Because you are a motivation coach too, or life coach. So if you have one of those stories, it'll be cool.
I'm sure this young man is listening now, but he and I talk fairly often, and he's one of the kids that really, 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 I don't want to put too much out there, but he was taken away from his parents, put into mm-hmm. a foster home or a group home, to where he was abused by the staff there. And he, I mean, just imagine taking a young kid, you know, 9, 10, 12 years old, I forget how old he was, when he was displaced from his family, but putting that kid into a situation where they're being abused by the staff or the people that are supposed to be taking care of them, right? And I'm talking mm-hmm. sexually abused. And
yeah.
so he was able to, he accredited me for this, but, you know, it's really about having the right attitude towards change. And, you know, when I guess, you know, if you have people around you that really do care and really can empathize with you and really can give you the right guidance, anything mm-hmm. possible. So he ended up overcoming all of that to having a kid of his own. He's married. He's successful. He's doing a job that he loves.
Wow.
I don't want to say too much for, you know, identity. You know, I don't want to. But
sure.
he's and I really talk. I'm coaching people. I talk about, you know, people's jobs and what they're doing for money. And,
right.
You know, a lot of people end up doing stuff for money, but they don't have that balance of doing something that they love also. Or, you know, ultimately, if you can make a living from something that you love to do, then, I mean, you sealed the deal, you know?
Right. See, that makes us feel good. When you help someone, is there a selfish thing inside you saying makes you a better person? Do you still have that hole in you that say, you know, go ahead.
Absolutely. I do this. Brian, I'm serious when I said I don't need to be doing anything for money anymore. I don't need to be doing anything at all. I bought a domain to advertise the book. It's called whyme.world. And why I picked the world is because I want these experiences in the book to affect the world. Okay.
Right.
Not just you know, United States. Anybody that can pick up this book, I think, can get something out of it. And you know, selfishly, this is the reward that I get. Is I almost daily, I get a message from somebody saying, "Wow, this really resonated with me," you know. And and they're all adults that are messaging me. I haven't gotten any messages from kids, but I've been able to have mentors. I've interacted with kids back when I was living in the States for years. So I've gotten those kudos, but right now it's pretty, like, it's just amazing to me that I get a message going, I can't believe this, or this really made me think about .. You know, and that's you know, part of the reason why I wrote the book. It's part of the reason why I do what I'm doing, is because I want to create those moments for people. I want in a year from now for you to be living your absolute perfect, best, ideal life. And if you can say that I had anything to do with that, even if it's just a word or two that I said, even if it's just you watching a video that I did on YouTube, whatever the heck it is, and you message me, that makes me feel so good. That it really does, you know.
That is so cool. Now, we can't – you're a winner. I know you're a winner. You've been a winner since 12. You win. We hate losing. We hate it. It's the worst thing in the world. And if we do lose, we overcompensate the winning. We're going to make sure we win harder. It's not all success stories. It's kind of true, isn't it? We do this.
It is.
Have you ever had anything that was not a success story that you just couldn't reach this person no matter what you did, no matter you didn't give up, but you just couldn't reach it and had a bad ending? You don't have to say the name or anything, but we can't all be winners, and all of them are not going to have a happy ending.
I'm gonna answer that in two parts. One is, even when I was competing in martial arts, and I was really good at it, okay, I winning tournaments all over the state. We went out of state. I'm just sweeping up divisions. And so it was just something that I was really good at. I trained a lot. I loved it. I would be training outside on the concrete until my feet were bleeding. They'd blister up, and then they'd pop and they'd bleed. And I didn't care. I just loved it. And so I was really good at that. And I often enjoyed or wanted to lose. I wanted to lose a match. I wanted to lose something because that was my, this is how I can become better. I'm not blocking these types of kids. Look at that. There's a blind spot here. So I think any self-made successful person, self-made millionaire, self-made businessman, anybody that really has tried things in his or her life will tell you they get the most out of losing, not winning, because you expect to win. I don't expect to lose anything. I lose a lot. I don't win a lot. I fail often, but I never expect it. You know, I'll start something. You know, I started this thing called Coach's Circle. And I just thought all these life coaches, I had this idea of all these life coaches being in this coach's circle, and then I was going to offer them a monthly subscription. They were going to get recommendations for, like, talk shows like yourself. I was going to vet like different types mm-hmm. of photographers, different types of things. And I was going to just have this like nice group of, and I said, I'm going to limit it to only 200 people. I don't want more than that. And I launched Cold Cut. So there's a lot more to it. We don't need to get all into it, but I had this great idea. I thought, oh my goodness, there is nothing out there like it. I can't wait to offer this to life coaches because this is it. Because the life of coaching industry is so unregulated. Anybody can become a life coach. Everyone thinks that just because they experience something, they're a great life coach, which is not true. Okay. But I thought if I could help people become great life coaches, they can go on and help other people. And I thought this is great. It was a dismal failure. I have no people signed up for the coaches. So it's out there on the website. Yeah, it like, well, I would call on my friends like, oh, I got this revolutionary thing, man. I can't wait. And every now and then a friend will ask me, hey, so what's my coach? I'm like, yeah, oh, man, that hasn't worked yet. But I learned it humbled you. You know, it kind of it makes you go, okay, you know what? Like, maybe that's not the best idea. I'm always self-reflective, and I go, maybe that's not the best idea that you had. Maybe it's the right timing. Maybe we need to do more advertising. Maybe something, you know. And so I lost, man. Okay, you know, I lost time, energy, money, everything. But okay, whatever. You know, we're all afraid of. We never do. You hear me, Brian? We're so afraid of losing. We never freaking do anything. And so I had this conversation. I had this conversation today. I hired a public relations person to help me out. And he and I were talking. He's a great guy. I really like him. He's in the UK. And we were talking about the fact that people we're built for complacency, we're built for comfortability. We are biologically that's the place that your body needs to be. Okay, and I'll give you a couple examples. When I'm a big guy, I used to work out all the time, and you know even at 46, I still have a lot of muscle. Okay, and the reason why you go to the gym, you lift really heavy. And your muscles grow is because you're putting that demand on your body. Your body is an organism that just wants to survive and live. And so your body is going, okay, you're telling me this is what we're going to do. I need to make more muscle to do it. Same thing with long distance runners. You know, okay, their lungs are amazing, right? Because they're telling their body consistently, this is the demand that you need to meet, and your body will meet it. Okay. And so I say all of that to say we're built for complacency. We like to be comfortable and not to have to like have change, not everything just kind of being there. And so a lot of times people will get into the middle class, right? They'll start making, you know, a decent amount of money and that's it. And for the rest of their life, they're making, you know, say, you know, low six figures. Right. So they're making $100,000 a year and that's it. They never do anything else with their life. But they have something in them. They want to go play, learn the guitar. They want to go life coach. They want to do something else.
Sure.
They're comfortable.
Right.
They're comfortable. So, getting out of that comfort zone every day, you know, every week I want to do something different. If I fail at it, well, I did, and maybe I hang my failures up. I use this analogy. I put my failures up in the closet, and it's like that shirt that you don't quite fit right now. You know, you said, man, I got a little fat. I can't get my button jeans, you know, but they're there. We all have it, right? You got something in your closet that you don't fit anymore. And you go, I'm going to keep it anyway. And so that's where all my failures are. They're hanging up in the closet. I'm going to take them out whenever I slim down a little bit.
You know,
I'm like you. This is just a quick story going off of your interview, but I was just going to share something with you. We had some problems with the neighbor. So they wanted to go to get a restraining order. I go, oh, shit. So me and my girlfriend, they take us to court for the restraining order. We're there. I'm going, shit. I didn't want to be – there was no need for a restraining order because I didn't want to be around those people I just wanted to be far enough away from them, so I'm there. And then the judge said something that was the worst thing that ever my girlfriend ever heard. The judge said, Mr. Jackson, and my girlfriend knew what was going on, what was about to happen next. And I go, yes, judge. Do you have your attorney here? I go, no, I don't. And she goes, would you like to act as your attorney? That was the worst thing my girlfriend ever. I go, I could be my attorney? She goes, I've never been to my attorney before. You know, it was like, sure. It was a fiasco. It was a disaster. It was almost like I never saw a judge almost cry and say, please let somebody help you, sir. And I go, no, I'm good. I lost the case. My girlfriend yelled at me, blah, 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 blah. And I go, you know what? How many people get to defend themselves in a real courtroom and I'm this and this? I win. It's a one-time-in-a-lifetime thing. Nobody can do this. The winning and losing was a benefit, but I did it in front of a live judge. I even cross-examined my own people, and I didn't even know them. But the judge goes, do you know this person? No. Why do you want to talk to him, Mr. Judge? They look interesting. That does not pertain to the case. Okay. I object. Of what? I don't know. I just wanted to say that. But I got a chance. I never got, but it was just, so I didn't lose. Is that, that's a once in a lifetime thing. Real judge, real courtroom, and I was an attorney for one day. I won. That's how I feel.
You won. Oh, man. That can't say that I've represented myself in court. You can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Make sure it's a minor charge. I mean, murder, I suggest to get attorney, but, you know, I had nothing to lose. I was losing the case anyway. Wow.
You didn't want to be around him anyhow.
I didn't. I still won. Well, Mr. Jackson, you cannot be 180 feet. Okay, I win again. I didn't want to be around these 2 miles with these motherfuckers. Well, you know what I mean?
Can you make it 300 feet, please?
Exactly. Judge, please. So it was a win-win. It was a good day. But I do want to ask you, going back to the book, we're talking to the famous, he used to be infamous, but as time goes on, the famous David Armstrong. His book is Why Me? My Fight for Life. It's on Amazon now. And we're going to the last category here. And David, you know, I want to ask you about teens and parents. Now, we know the typical teen is going to rebel against his parents. We know this. This is just natural. This is part of the teen. But what signs do we look for as a parent? Let's say you're a single parent now, whether you're a father with a daughter or mother with a boy. We're in the teens now. We're in the 14, 15. But what signs do we really need to look for if the kid is in trouble? We know the typical rebellion. Oh, mom. But what are the signs that are dangerous signs that a parent needs to look at towards their kid?
I'll answer that also in twofold. So one is going to be single parents. And so this is serious. This is serious. When I decided to be a life coach, I thought, what's the best way for me to really become the best life coach? And so I went and enrolled in a program at Liberty University that it's a psychology program. So I'm getting my degree in psychology with an emphasis in life coaching. And I said all that to say, this is something that we studied, and this is something that I've seen throughout my time with young men and young women trying to mentor and help them. If you're coming from a single parent home, statistically, your kid is going to be is at a disadvantage. How about that? Is that a disadvantage? Mm-hmm. And that that's not a poke at mom or dad. That's mm-hmm. just a fact. And so quicker you can accept the statistics, quicker that you can accept the fact that your kid, if you're raising him or her as a single parent, they're percentage. That's and you know, we don't need to argue statistics. We see it. I've seen it throughout my career working with you. And so, but you know, what I've seen is the other side of that, where they're off of the deep end. You know, they're not doing well. You know, they've been taken away from mom and dad, and they're not, you know, they're in placement and they're not okay. So, if you're a single parent, the best advice that I could give you is go to upna.net and hire me. No, I'm kidding.
No.
go get a mentor.
Right.
Get a mentor for him or her. Get someone, you know, there's a lot of programs, like I volunteered for years for Big Brothers Big Sisters. There's a lot of programs out there that are free of charge, that provides a good mentor for your team. I will plug my program a little bit. So I just developed, hopefully this is not going to sit in the closet like everything else. But I just developed this team program where I'm doing life coaching one-on-one with the teens, one-on-two with the teens and their parents, or parents. It doesn't matter. Right now it's just, you know, single parents, but it could be both parents and the teen, as well as doing a combined Zoom session, where all the teens can come on and, collaborate and talk and just have a safe space for themselves. So that's a little bit of a plug for what I'm doing, but more importantly, you gotta find, if you're a single mom, single dad, you gotta find a good role model for your team. You really have to. And unfortunately, in our digital age, a lot of bad role models out there that are easily accessible for our team. And we know that, you know, we parents know that, we as non-parents know that, we see it all day, every day. And then if you're in a family of three, four, five, whatever, you got mom, you got dad, and your teen is just being a teen. The best advice that I could give you would be, and this is going to vary on degree of rebellion, right? But would be to get him or her involved in stuff that they enjoy. Both of my kids are adults now. They're both in their 20s, their early 20s. And the thing that I try to do as a young parent, really young parent, is to get my kids exposed to everything. Hey, you ever thought about track and field? Well, not really. Well, try it. And my daughter really she got a lot out of that. And this is just how she is in life now. She understands that failure is just a hurdle that you can say, okay, I overcame that. Here we go on the next thing. You know, I can hang that in the closet. She tried all kinds of stuff. Same thing with my son. You know, I was constantly going, hey, you know, and you know, try this, try that, try this, get into something. So get your team into something that they, not you, they want to do. You know, guitar lessons, and you can find, you know, if you don't have the money to do it, you can find almost anything at a community center at low cost, if not free, at different teen outreach programs at low cost, if not free. So it just takes a little bit of effort, but you're the one who brought the kid in the world, so you may as well make sure that they end up being a productive member of society. It's your job to do that, not theirs, yours. So you know, I just had this conversation with my daughter yesterday about my granddaughter. So she has a beautiful 6-year-old, and I said, look, you're killing it as a parent. And she's a single parent. I said, you're killing it as a parent because you got Isabella in all sorts of different programs. She's modeling. She's doing ballet. She's doing hip hop. She loves to dance. So figuring out like what your kids like to do early on is a huge success, you know. Because once they get to a certain age, they're able to really home in on that, and hopefully they turn into adults. And if they don't have a job doing what they love, then they can get a job doing something else to make money, and they can still do what they love to do because they figured out, like, oh, I really love playing the guitar. You know, I'm in this little band on Saturdays, you know, or maybe they're going to focus on making it big. Whatever it is, at least they have something for their soul.
That's good advice, my friend. David, I can hold you all day, but our interview is over, buddy. I had to do some personal things early in the morning, but you pep me up. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to do something that I'm going to fail at. I can't wait to do it and be humbled by it.
Oh, well, I'm glad. Now you just feel good. I'm glad it pepped you up a little bit. I loved our talk. It was very flowed very well. So, and you're a great host. You're a great interviewer.
Oh,
I appreciate you.
I do too. I love how you do. I just love your energy, and I love how you your outlook in life. And we share the same girl, Dr. Melissa Cottle. She is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
She's the best.
She is amazing. I'm so glad I found her. She's inspired me to write another book.
Cool. No, she is good. She is real good. She is such a – I've known her for a while, maybe 7-8 years. She's such a prima donna, so sweet. She's like the good angel. And when she came out with one of her books,
yeah.
and I said, is there any dirty parts? She goes, yes. I go, really? So I had her on a show because I just wanted to hear her say some dirty stuff in the book. And she goes, I will not say it. I said, it's your book. Read the dirty parts. No.
That's so funny. Yeah, she's pretty cool.
She is one of a kind.
Yeah.
Well, we have that 1 minute, Mike. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Melissa. Mel. Cuddle. So, David, we have 1 minute. David, we're here again. Let me get the name straight. David Armstrong. The book, Why Me? My Fight for Life, is on Amazon now. David, you have 1 minute, and this is where you pitch. This is where you tell people about your social media, about your marketing skills, anything that you want to do, and it's all yours, David. And again, David Armstrong, everybody.
Brian, 1 minute, I'm not going to pitch myself. I don't like marketing. I don't like, if something in the 1 hour resonated with you, go visit upna.net, Unlimited Potential Network Academy. Contact me, go buy the book. If something didn't resonate with you, if something didn't make you go, I want to reach out to this guy. That's okay. You know, maybe you get the book for somebody else. Somebody just told me, a friend of mine just told me that he's going to buy 100 books and take them down to the jail, that he lives near a prison and he's going to take them down there. And I thought that was a great idea. This guy is a solid guy. He doesn't need my advice, but he can recognize somebody else might. So I appreciate your time, Brian. I appreciate all your listeners' time. I hope everyone has an amazing, amazing week, amazing month, amazing life. If something I said or do can help that, then great.
Well, thank you. And I usually don't pitch for my guests, but I'm going to say one thing, if I may. You know, you may not have a child or even an adult. And I'm talking grown men. Sometimes bad boys make bad husbands. I mean, it's just the truth. And you may have the perfect angel, but you don't know their friends. And sometimes we don't know a lot about our kids' friends and who they hang out with or their friends or their friends hang out with. But I do recommend getting the book, Why Me? My Fight for Life, because it is a life story. And we will come to a crossroads in our life. That's just how it is. This is how life is. We are going to be tested. We will. That's how we grow. You're going to need a book like this. You're going to need it in your shelf. You're going to need it from a friend. You're going to need it for somebody else's friend. Because this book can save your life and can turn someone's life around. Or just the inspirational or motivational aspect of the book, it is a keeper. Remember the name, David Armstrong. remember the book, Why Me? My Fight for Life, because one day you will be fighting for life or somebody else's life, and you need a life coach, and this guy is a coach, and you can't get him, get his book. It'll put you through the next day. How's that, David?
I appreciate you, Brian. I really do. Hey, everybody, just remember whyme.world.
That's it. David Armstrong, everybody. You're my new favorite guy. Say hello to our girl, David Armstrong. That's right. Look at that crowd. Look at that. Wow. This is Brian the Hammer Jackson, and we'll be back tomorrow on Hammer 96.7. We give you the best guests, the best entertainment. We're the number one show in the morning. That's why we're here. See you later, David. Be safe. Love you, man. And thank you for coming in the studio.
Love you too, brother. Thank you. I appreciate you and everybody. Ciao.
I appreciate you, and may you be safe. Bye, everybody. See you tomorrow. There you go. They won't leave the studio. David's here. David has left the building. Ah, you bastard. All right. See you guys tomorrow. This is Brian Hammer Jackson.